You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
Get your free inventor's information. Call 1-800-353-6490. That's 1-800-353-6490. Again, 1-800-353-6490.
At St. Jude, a family never sees a bill at all. It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Sometimes riders feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our riding into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable riders to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a rider's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
Sometimes we need to slow down and remember the simple pleasures in life. Good coffee, good books, and good company. Come on in. Take a seat. The coffee's just been brewed. Let's see who we have in the coffee shop today.
All right, as I look around the coffee shop, who do I see? Tanya Binford. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
I am doing just fine. And it looks like there's a book on that table with your name on it, Crossing the Wake.
Yeah.
Wow. So tell me about your book. What genre is it?
It's a memoir. It's about my 5,000-mile journey circumnavigating the eastern United States on my 25-foot boat.
Wow. That sounds fascinating. It really does.
It was quite the trip.
I'm sure it was. So, what kind of boat was this that you were circumnavigating the eastern coast, east coast on?
Well, it was more than the east coast. I went up into Canada and down the rivers across the Gulf and back up the east coast.
Oh.
So the boat was a 25-foot Ranger tug, which is considered a pocket cruiser. So it's very small, but it has all the amenities of a small trip, like a travel trailer. Not a lot of space, but plenty of amenities.
Okay, so you have a bathroom and a shower and things like that.
Yeah, my bathroom and shower took up about 4 square feet. Very small space.
Okay, that's tiny.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think my bathroom sink was all of about 8 to 10 inches diameter.
Okay, this is definitely tiny.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a great little boat, though, because it had a lot of things that I needed for being on the waterways. So it had really good navigation equipment. It had radar. I had things for cooking, like a microwave. I had a crock pot, a stove, things like that.
Were you alone on the boat during this whole trip?
I was. I was alone for most of the trip, except for a couple of small parts. There were 3 days, actually 3 nights, my mother was with me. And I call that, like, that chapter, the 3 days in a closet with my mother. It was a little tense. But my mother has forgiven me.
Okay. I know my mom and I didn't always get along, so I couldn't imagine being stuck in that small of a spot with my mom for that long.
Yeah, and I get along really well with my mom. We really get along great, what can I say? But even still, it's a small space, and it was pretty tense for me. And my mom was not a boater, and so it was a little bit difficult at times, and she could be kind of concrete. So, for instance, there was a time I wanted her to take a picture of the Statue of Liberty. And so I sent her to the back of the boat with a camera to take a picture. And I looked back and I'm floating out in front of the Statue of Liberty. And you can imagine in the New York Harbor, there's boats everywhere. It's choppy. It feels like a washing machine because the water is everywhere. And my mom was quietly sitting with the camera on her lap. And I called back and I said, "Mom, like, take a picture already." And she said, "I'm just waiting for it to calm down, Tanya." And I had to go back and kind of say, "No, take the picture anyway. It's never going to calm down. We're in the New York Harbor." So it got a little bit tense at times. And my mom had a hard time reading that chapter. And I had to explain to my mom that no matter what was written, I loved her no matter what. And so she said, "So then if I write 100 times, I love my daughter no matter what, I'll be able to read that chapter?" And so I said, "Yeah, do that." So she used to be a teacher.
Ah, that explains the write it 100 times routine.
Yeah. But it's all good. She has gone back and reread that chapter, and there's some things that, you know, we've talked about it since, and we're good. Like I said, we're talking.
Well, that's always a good thing, because you definitely don't want your book to cause family strife.
No, no. But I'll tell you what else. You know, my sister, when she and I start to get into it or something, I just warn her ahead of time that she might be in my next book, so she better watch it.
Actually, I have a friend who's a writer, and she writes thriller novels.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, she's unpublished as of yet, but I've read some of her beta for her, and her husband had somebody that was just absolutely driving him crazy. So she put him in the book and killed him off, and it wasn't pretty.
That's scary. And nobody gets killed off in my book.
Well, that's good. Because that meant, because yours is a memoir, it would have happened in real life, and that would be sad.
Would be. It would be not very nice. Yeah.
So, what made you want to take this trip in the first place, and how long did it take?
The trip itself took me about 6 months. Most people take this trip and do it in about a year, 8 months to a year. And most of the people who are doing it are couples who have retired. However, I was a little bit naive about things. I had been living in Arizona. One of my best friends died in her 50s with cancer. Actually, a couple of my friends died who had cancer in their 50s. So when I was about 45 years old, I decided that when I turned 50, I was going to do something really cool. And I am a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and I had talked to my patients, and I'm always trying to get them to do things that they want to do in their life, no matter what it is. Like, you know, if you want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, go do it. If you want to take a boat trip, go do it. Whatever it is you want to do, it doesn't matter, but just doing something. So I would talk to my patients about things that I would want to do. And I said, when I turn 50, I want to go sailing for 6 months. And of course, everybody thought I was crazy because I lived in Arizona in the middle of the desert. So in 2010, the opportunity came for me to move to North Carolina. And so now I live on the coast, and I was able to learn about boating. And so I guess by then I was about 47. And so I did a little bit of boating. And while living here, I realized that sailing off into the sunset was probably not the greatest idea for a single woman my age. And my son, he had come out here with me, and he was at the marina, and he met some people who had done the same trip, which is called the Great Loop. And so he came home one day and he said, "Mom, this is the trip that you need to take because it's safer. There's going to be people along the way. You're going to be closer to shore." And so that was kind of how the idea of doing the Great Loop came about. And so I planned for it. And then when the time came, I was ready. And I was, like I said, I was a little bit naive. I didn't know what all it entailed other than what I had read. But the other thing is I didn't have any preconceived notions like a lot of people do. Like sometimes there's preconceived notions about women doing boating, for instance. So although a lot of men have done this trip single-handed, it turns out I was like the first woman to do it single-handed. That's because I didn't know any better.
That must make you feel really proud, though, to be the first woman to do it single-handed.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really know about that at the time. The idea was just to be out on a boat for 6 months to a year and change my life. And one of the best parts about it is that I only had to be responsible for myself and my boat during that time frame. My kids are grown, so I don't need to be responsible for them anymore. And as a nurse practitioner, like normally when I'm working, I feel responsible for about 300 to 400 people at any given moment. And although I know that I'm not specifically responsible for all those people, that's still kind of a weight that I carry with me, is that responsibility. So for that time that I was doing this trip, I didn't have to be responsible for anybody else, which was awesome.
Well, I know that as much as I want to, I will probably never get to accomplish one of my dreams.
Why not?
Because I'm now a wheelchair user, and I wasn't when I had the dream, and so I have to modify things a little bit.
Yeah, so it was the dream.
I originally wanted to go do some mountain climbing, and I've done a million amazing things.
Yeah.
I have jumped out of planes. I have scuba dived. I have been on some adventures that probably would make a great book.
Sounds like it.
But I'm no writer. But anyway, I digress. But after the accident that landed me in the chair, I knew that mountain climbing probably wasn't the best idea.
Yeah. So you get to find a new idea. Like, I went from sailing to being in a little tugboat with a motor, recognizing that sailing was probably not the greatest idea for me single-handing, especially since I didn't grow up sailing.
That was probably a smart move.
Yeah.
Now, what I've done instead is I've tried to write. I feel like I'm on an island surrounded by all these little sharks that are writers and always saying, you need to write, you need to write, you need to write. And I have tried. I have tried. But writing is hard.
It is hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. I tell people it was harder to write my book than to do The Great Loop.
Okay.
I was one of those kids in high school that just about flunked out of English.
I was never that bad. But for me, there's something called NaNoWriMo, and it's National Novel Writing Month. It's 50,000 words in 30 days, and a lot of my friends do it, like more than 100 of them. So you can imagine the, you need to write, little seagulls, like in Finding Nemo. Yeah. Mine. In this case, it's write.
I was told about that when I first was told about writing a book. And I joined it, and I could not do that. And I am not, I never thought of my, like, I was never a boater until I did The Great Loop, and now I'm a boater. I was not a writer until I wrote this book. The stuff that I used to write when I was, like, in school, you have papers, and they're really boring, and they're usually research-oriented. At least all of my stuff was, because it was more science-based. And so it was really, really boring writing that I was expected to do, whether it was getting my bachelor's degree or my graduate degree. It was boring. I hated it. One time I was taking a psychopharmacology class and we had a research paper that was due and I decided I just wasn't going to do it, not the way they wanted me to do it. So I decided to write about acupuncture. And I had to give a presentation, and my presentation, my PowerPoint presentation, included a tree. That was it. And at the end of the class, my teacher came up to me, and she asked me about that. And I said, I'm done writing papers. I'm sick of it. I hate this writing. And so she said, well, do you want to do over? And I said, no. She says, I'm going to have to, like, give you a grade lower. You're an A student. I'm going to have to give you a B. And I said, that's fine. Go for it. Give me a B. I don't care. I'm just so tired of writing boring papers. And so that was like the last of my writing until I wrote a book. And then my book did really well. And I even got like an award for it. So I guess now I'm a writer.
Well, actually, I'd say you're an author.
Yes,
because you're a published writer.
Yes, absolutely.
So, what award did your book win?
It won a Seven Sisters Book Awards, and the Seven Sisters Book Awards go out to women writers writing about women's stories. So, I chose that to compete in because it just seemed like it was a perfect fit for my book. And then when I won, that was awesome. I actually went to our local coffee shop, and for a whole day, I got everybody who walked in got free coffee to celebrate.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I'm a fan of coffee shops. What can I say?
I know, right?
As you can see, I named my show Jesse's Coffee Shop. Hmm.
I know. Well, and everyone should be able to walk into a coffee shop randomly and get a free cup of coffee. There's nothing better than that.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty excited about that.
All right. So are you self-published or traditionally published?
I feel like I'm a combination because although I am self-published, I did go through a publishing house. I went through Mill City Press. And I wanted to do a lot of things that traditional publishers do. So, for instance, a lot of people who self-publish will do print on demand, where they can just print one book at a time or 50 books. And I chose to do offset printing, which meant that my first print run was about 1,500 books, and I paid for it up front. But my book has the look of a book that was that you would find in any bookstore. And like if it's sitting next to a New York Times bestseller, my book fits in with those books as far as the look goes. And that was really important to me. I spent, I think, even more fun than writing the book. Okay, writing the book wasn't that fun. It was really hard work. But the fun part of the book was actually the cover design and getting the cover together and the artistic part. I really enjoyed that.
So you had some say in the cover.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, I felt like a project manager when it came to the cover design.
Tell me about it.
So my cover design, I wanted a picture of my boat, and somebody in my writer's group had suggested that my boat looked like it was in choppy seas. And so what I did is I took my boat, and I went to a graphic designer, and I took a picture of my boat, and I had the graphic designer overlay it onto a picture of choppy water with clouds in the background. And then I took that and I took it to a friend of mine who's a painter, who's an artist, an amazing painter. And I had him paint the picture. And then from there, the company that I worked with, Mill City Press, they took his painting, which I sent them like a JPEG or whatever of that picture. And then they came up with some cover designs. And so we narrowed it down to like four cover designs. Then I took it to about 50 different people and asked them which one they liked best. And there were actually two that worked really well. And so between those two, I had to pick one. And so I took them and I went to my local bookstore and I set them up, you know, at the bookstore next to other books and looked at it and figured out which one really popped out the most. And so that's how I came up with my cover design. It was really fun. That was a good process.
That does sound like a fascinating story. And I think that's the most work I've ever heard of someone putting into a cover design.
Well, like I said, I think the cover design was a lot more fun. The writing is really, it's really difficult for me. Writing is, it's the hardest thing I've ever done.
I think you're the first author I've had on the show who has admitted that writing is hard work.
It is. It's really hard work. I am easily distracted. So sitting and writing is just hard for me. And then I was a really bad writer, a really, really bad writer, embarrassingly bad, I think. But I joined a writer's group, and my writer's group really helped me develop my writing. So when you have five people critiquing your writing, it can be a little bit overwhelming. And I had to get myself a black and white printer because of all the red that would come back on my writing when they would critique it, because my feelings would get hurt. But it helped me become a better writer, so it's all good.
So are you going to write a second book or dabble in fiction? Or are you going to stick with nonfiction?
You know, I am not nearly creative enough to do nonfiction. I think fiction writers are amazing because they have really good imaginations. But I have a lot of stories in my head that I could write about. And I actually wrote out, I have the first line of my next book. That's about as far as I've gotten. Actually, I have a few pages written. But the first line is, I share my office with dead people.
Okay.
How's that for first line?
You got my attention.
Yeah, so it's a really catchy first line, and I like it. And part of it goes back to my work as a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and it goes back to things like it talks a little bit about the opiate epidemic, and sometimes I worry about it being too serious. So we'll see. We'll see what I do with it. Like I said, writing to me is really hard. It took me a year to get my first draft written of Crossing the Wake. And then it took almost a whole nother year to get it finished and published.
So it was a whole 2-year process. Now, before you submitted it to the publishing company, aside from your writer's group, did you hire a professional editor?
Yes. Actually, our writer's group is very much into getting things done professionally. So most of the people in our group, we hire people not just to help us with cover design, but we all hire editors. So I hired about 3 different editors. One of the editors, I forgot what they're called, developmental editors. So a developmental editor helps you look at how things are going together. So I did that. I had another editor who I hired, and she was the most expensive editor I had, and she was not a very nice person. She was brutal, and she would probably be better for somebody who's working on a dissertation, and she would write me these emails saying, do more research, do more research. Finally, I emailed her back, and I said, what am I supposed to do, research my soul? I was really irritated with her. And then she wrote me back that was the best writing she had seen of mine. So we didn't get along all that great. And so after her, then I hired another editor who was really awesome. And she was really supportive and encouraging. And I didn't, you know, there were things that she would say that I didn't necessarily follow along with. But she could bring stuff up, or she had a way of saying things. And there were some things that I forgot what it was, but it was, she would say something like, previously I said, do you remember when I said such and such? And that just didn't flow with my writing style. So I didn't necessarily use those words that she gave me. But whenever she brought up a section of my book or a paragraph or a line that didn't make sense, I definitely tried to change it and make it so it did make sense. But it also had to stay in my, it had to still sound like me talking, not somebody else talking. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense, to quote my dear host Kitty, who is thankfully curled up napping.
Awesome. We put her to sleep. Great.
Yes, Mr. Host Kitty has pawed off and found the recliner.
A good place to be. Yep. Yeah, so having your own voice was really important also. And not getting too caught up in other people's edits, because then their voices will come through. So I learned a lot, yeah.
So was joining the writers group something that really helped you? And how did you find the writers group that you joined? Because you weren't involved in the writing community working on this novel, you know, this novel for a couple of years. It was just one of those, okay, I'm going to write my memoir.
Exactly. So finding a writer's group was hard. We have a retirement community here called St. James, and I do not live in that community. However, they have like a newsletter that they circulate throughout their community, and I think it's an online newsletter, and they have advertisements. So I had a friend of mine put in an ad saying that I was looking for a writer's group. So my friends knew that there were other writers in that community, and so I was able to contact them through that. And then I had to, in order to join the writers group, they kind of questioned me about how serious I was about writing, because our group is very specific. You have to write to publish. So it's not like a writers group because you want to have a blog or for some other purpose. It's writing to publish a book. So then they made me do an exercise, a writing exercise, and I had to present that, and I had to answer the questions, and then they let me join their group.
I think it's great that the writers group had a very specific and almost singular focus because I'm, like I said before, I'm surrounded by writers and authors. I can't do it. I've tried, but I can't. But anyway, I've also heard about the drama that goes on in their writers group because some of them want to be hobbyists, others want to publish. Then they get into the spats over self versus traditional publish. And it's like, okay, I'm taking my headphones off and picking up my Kindle and going back to my own little world. And I'll let you guys sort it all out.
Right. Yeah, we have a very focused writers group. And we were also very goal oriented. So we would meet like twice a month. And it was very goal oriented. So if you showed up, before we ever showed up to our writers group, we would have to submit online some of our writing, even if it was just a few pages, to have other people in our writers group critique it. And it was also a fairly small group, so there was about six of us at the time. And so there was always stuff to critique. And not only were you being critiqued, but you also were expected to critique everybody else's work. So it took time to do. And we also questioned each other about our goals. Like, what is your goal before our next writer's group or before we meet again? What are you going to have accomplished? And so even taking into account things like vacations, we kept each other on track. And our writer's group has, I think, published about 9 books. Mostly, most of them are fiction. So it's good. And the guys in our group tend to do, like, the murder mystery kind of books.
Are you still part of that writer's group?
I am. And our writer's group has taken a little bit different focus. Now we have, like, a meeting. One of our meetings is focused on marketing and publishing, and the other meeting is focused on the writing. The other thing that we do is if somebody goes to a workshop for writing, they will bring back and share what they've learned from that workshop. One of the best paragraphs that I have in my book, it was actually a technique I learned in one of my writers groups. One of the members had come in with this exercise on how to write. It was like a 14-sentence exercise. And the exercise included things like, okay, your first sentence is going to be, you know, like 5 words. Your second sentence is going to include a color, an article of clothing, and some action. I don't know. And then you're going to have a sentence that, you know, includes something else, like you're comparing one thing to another. And it has like 14 different lines. And so we just kind of randomly just picked a scene and we wrote out this paragraph. And that exercise made one of my sections really pop and stand out. And it was amazing the difference it made. And so after that exercise, I came home and I went through my manuscript and I found about 5 different places in my book that would make it better. And I went through and I said, okay, I'm going to use it here, 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 and here. And it made a huge difference. So
I think that sounds fantastic. And I also think it's amazing that you're still part of the writers group, even though you're not currently actively working on another project.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're encouraging me to work on another project. And so I do want to work on another project. But like I said, I find it really hard. And the other thing is I have to make a living. So I'm still like a single person with my only income being my only income. So I don't have a lot of free time to be writing. When I came back from my trip, I did not get my job back like I had planned to. And so I was told, like, well, what other ideas do you have? And so I started writing because a lot of people had suggested I write about my trip. But then I decided I would only work part-time once I did start working. And so I thought, well, you know, I'll just give myself a year working part-time. And so I did. I did that first year working part-time. And then my daughter said, well, Mom, it's been a year. You need to go back to work, don't you think? And my daughter's an adult, and she's very driven and goal-oriented. And I said, well, honey, I think I need another year. So I took another year to work part-time. so I could, like, you know, finish all the edits of my book and do all the marketing and figure out the publishing and all that stuff. But now it's been a couple years and my book's been out for a while. So I think it's about time that I, like, maybe grow up a little bit and start working a little bit more. And I probably need to do that because I'm still too young to retire. So in my spare time, I'll probably write, but my next book may take me more than a year to write.
I have talked to many writers and many authors, and I have heard of books taking from 3 years to 5 years, or started when they were a teenager and not fully fleshed out and developed until they were in their 30s.
I know. And I think part of it is because, well, anything that I really don't like to do a lot of, I try to get through quickly to minimize, you know, how hard it is. And writing is not something that's easy for me. I don't sit down. It's not something I enjoy. It's hard. I love my work. I love what I do for a living. That I thoroughly enjoy, but writing is a lot more difficult. And so writing for me is more something I've been driven to do from an internal, like, I've got to do this, got to get this information out there. So I feel more driven to do it than desiring to do it, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it makes all the sense in the world. And I'm going to ask you to hang on with me while we take a commercial break. And we will be back with all of you after we pay those radio station bills.
You're listening to the Spark Radio Network. Internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
And
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
Get your free inventor's information. Call 1-800-353-6490. That's 1-800-353-6490. Again, 1-800-353-6490.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps stand ready to defend the American way of life. The few, the proud, the Marines.
At St. Jude, a family never sees a bill at all. It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Sometimes riders feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our riding into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable riders to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a rider's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your riding into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
All right. Thank y'all for hanging in there with us while we paid those radio station bills. Unfortunately, it is a necessity. And Tanya is still here with me. So, Tanya, you are a nurse practitioner and you specialize in
psychiatry.
How did that impact your writing?
Initially, when I was writing, I did not necessarily want to bring in that part of me into my writing. However, when you're writing a memoir, it's very, very, very personal. And so people in my writers group really pushed me to bring that aspect into my writing. And so there are parts of my book where I talk about suicide and how it affected me personally. So it's very personal. And the other part about it is that all my patients that I left back at home when I went on my trip, they all knew that I was leaving on a trip and I was going to be gone for 6, 8 months, a year, however long. They followed along on my trip. And so every once in a while, I'd hear from people or hear from my office, or I'd get a phone call and somebody would say hello, and that was really great. And so I tried to bring that part into my writing. But I think the biggest part of my writing, there's a whole section that I call my Blue Moon section, which is about a patient that I had many years ago who committed suicide. And she did it on a blue moon at the end of July. So it really affected me a lot as a psychiatric nurse practitioner. And so I was sitting at anchor and you know, it's hard not to look up at the moon and know that this same day, even though it's been years, and you still think about those things. So I did. I brought a lot of that with me on the trip, and it shows in my book. So I didn't, there were things I had to minimize a little bit because sometimes it would get too heavy. So I didn't want it to be too heavy. But on the other hand, that's definitely a part of who I am. And I can't leave that outside the door. It's part of me.
Well, just like my friends will tell you, I probably bleed red, white, and blue or stars and stripes because patriotism and love for this country is definitely part of me. So you can't leave things like that at the door. It has to come through somehow.
Right. Yeah. So it was definitely a part of my book. And I've been doing a lot of book clubs. So I've probably done maybe 10, 15 book clubs, and every one of them is very different. And what I like about them is that everybody asks different types of questions. And so I've been to some book club groups where the conversation has been about suicide and suicide prevention. And what do you do if a family member has been suicidal? And although those are rare in the book clubs, a lot of the questions are, they're all different. All the questions are usually different. But what I do for a living has definitely been brought up in my book club meetings.
I think it's fantastic that you have the ability to almost talk to people who wouldn't normally ask a question in maybe a professional medical setting, but because you're there as an author at a book club, they get a chance to ask that question of a medical professional with the right knowledge, and it may spur them on to either get help or to get their family member help. So I think that's an outstanding outreach.
Yeah, it's been good because I think in general, suicide is a topic that doesn't get talked about very much. And yet it's when you have known people who have committed suicide or hurt themselves, it's hard, and part of it has to do with society and how we view suicide or even how we view mental illness. I work in public mental health, and so my view of public mental health is very different than everybody else's view of public mental health, right? But even just being able to talk about it is a good thing. So yeah, I definitely have it in my book, and I definitely am more than happy to talk to anybody who asked me questions about it.
Well, since you brought it up, would you mind, since you are a professional, telling people some of the signs that they can maybe watch out for if they're worried about a friend or a family member?
Yeah, well, one of the things that sometimes happens is, of course, if somebody is threatening suicide, that's always a sign to get help. And I am not one to just say, oh, don't do that, or let's not talk about it. I think if somebody's talking about it, you should definitely get help. But the other thing that happens usually before somebody gets to that point is people will isolate, and maybe you don't see somebody as often. I had a friend of mine who had kind of quit talking to me for a while, and she had a history of depression. And she had been getting more and more depressed. And it turns out that she also had a lump in her breast at the time. And she felt that nobody would care that she had this lump in her breast. And so she didn't get it checked. And finally one day, but she had really quit talking to me. And I didn't know why she had quit talking to me. But one day she called and she said that she had quit talking to me because she was taking everything really personally. So if I said something, she took it way too personally she misinterpreted what I said. So if I said something that was innocuous, she might take it as me being mean to her. And so she explained that that was what had been going on with her, but she was feeling really depressed. She felt that people at work didn't care about her. And so we talked about that, and I was able to get her started on an antidepressant. And then after she got started on her antidepressant, she was able to go and get her breast checked. But prior to that, she didn't even feel like anyone would care. anyway, so why bother getting it checked? And it turned out she did have cancer, and she was able to get it treated, and she is still doing great to this day. I think it's been like 10 years, and she is still cancer-free, which is really awesome. But I kind of wonder how sick she would have gotten had she not been willing to reach out and talk about feeling so depressed. But for her, there was also a family history of depression. You know, it's not just her, but her daughter has depression. Her son probably has some depression. So family history is really important as a part of it as well. Even in my family, I had my father's cousin committed suicide. And when I was young, we didn't talk about that. So I'm aware that it happened. And since then, I've been able to talk to my father's other cousin about it. And, you know, but back a long time ago, people never even brought it up. So now at least it's being more widely known. And even in the military, there are so many suicides in the military now, and with young men coming back from wars, that I think the military has done a really good job of bringing it out into the public awareness, and so that it's not seen as hopefully it doesn't have the stigma that it has had in the past. At least I don't think anybody wants, I think a person has to be pretty tormented to be able to go through with killing themselves. And it's that level of torment that we really try to work with in public mental health to help people with. So I'm probably going on way too long about mental health, but
that's okay.
It's my passion.
That's okay. It's your passion, and it comes through in your book, and it's part of who you are. And it's this show's about the books and the people, the writer behind the book.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to go back to the writing process just a little bit.
Well,
so how did you structure your day when you were writing? Did you just get up, have your coffee, and go to the keyboard? Or was it one of those things of you had to take care, you know, make sure you weren't working, you were working part-time at the time, but how did you structure your day to get in your writing time?
I was not very structured at that. I would try to write earlier in the day because I'm not much good late in the day. So if I could get started early, like usually in the morning, I get up and I go and I meet my friends for coffee at 7 o'clock in the morning, get home around 8 o'clock and take a shower. And then if I could get right started into writing, I would do that. And sometimes I would review what I had written beforehand. Like if I had submitted some stuff to my writer's group, I might review the edits and changes. The other thing that I did was I have these cork strips that I screwed onto my wall in my office. And I have three cork strips that go across. And I did not write my book in a very logical way. So I had my trip and I had little post-it notes of all the different, basically the different chapters that I would write about. So if something interesting happened or there was some type of lesson that I needed to learn, I would put that on a little piece of paper up on my corkboard, and it was all in order. So I would kind of randomly pick things. So I might, there was one section that was the last section of mine to be written, and that was a section that actually came towards the beginning of the book, and it was a section about being in a really bad storm with tornadoes about a mile away. And I slept through that.
That's scary.
Right. It should be scary. For any normal person, it would be scary. And I actually fell asleep. So I was reading a book, kind of minding my own business, and went to bed. But meanwhile, the other two boats that were anchored with me were not having that easy of a time. One of them lost their anchor, and their boat started drifting into the other boat. And so for the longest time, I had the two blogs of those two separate boats sitting on my cork board. And so I had information about that, but I didn't know how to write that scene to bring all that in because my perspective was boring, right? I watched what was going on around me. I went to sleep. But meanwhile, all this other stuff was going on And so I had to figure out how to make that realistic. And so part of it was doing the research of the time, but also I interviewed and taped one of the people. And then I also had the other two people that were involved. I had them read it and make sure that the language was correct for what I had them saying. So I ended up writing a dinner conversation about that instance. But writing a dialogue for a dinner conversation was really hard because I had to take three people's perspectives and use their language so it would be authentic. But that was the last thing I wrote in my book.
There's a lot of dialogue in other people's language in fiction, so maybe you have some, maybe you could do it, even if it is hard.
I know, right? But yeah, it was really important to me to get it right and to have that authenticity come through. And I wanted it to be real and for people to feel what it actually felt like in that moment.
Is there anything that you wanted to bring up that we haven't touched on yet?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Oh, I will tell you. So one of the things I learned about writing is that it's kind of like a symphony, right? You have to have subplots and sub-stories, and you have to weave them all together. So part of my book, I had been dating this guy before I left. And so I actually had to bring that in and kind of weave it in a little bit. So that's like a sub-story, right? So you have sub-stories. You have like the real story.
Yeah, you always have subplots.
You do, right. And so that was something I had to learn. It couldn't just be like an A, B, C, D, like this is, I did this, then I did this, then I did this, then I did this. I actually, you know, you have to say, that would be boring, right? So in order to make it an adventure, you have to take all that stuff and you take the interesting parts. So I have this line at the very beginning of my book that it's, I guess, I don't know if it's an epilogue or it's at the very beginning, but basically, or a prologue or something like that. Anyways, but it's a disclaimer. That's what I called it, my disclaimer. But basically it says I don't go into all the boring details. I just kind of like a big pot of soup or something, you know, you boil it all down till you get all the good flavors. And they all have to kind of mix together. So everything in my book is true, but I leave out all the boring stuff.
Yeah, I don't think most people want to read about how you made yourself dinner on the boat, unless something went cuckoo.
Right. Yeah, and there was this time when I was out on my boat where my autopilot didn't work, so I had to like learn how to pee in a urinal standing up. So like people don't need to know that, right? There are things people don't need to know about.
Hey, you just told them, but it's kind of a funny thing to have on the interview.
Right, I know, but it's like you know, you learn all kinds of things when you're out there on the water. So,
well, I have to say, and I've said on air many times, you know, as a wheelchair user, my whole life changed.
Yeah.
And I had to learn whole new ways of doing things. I don't always share that much of those new skills when I'm, you know, oh, well, I learned this and I learned that. I don't talk about that on air.
No.
I just usually boil it down to, I'm a tough cookie and it takes a lot to make me crumble.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I'm a tougher cookie now that I've done this book and that I've gone on my trip.
So did the boyfriend support you during your trip or did you guys break up before you left?
We broke up before I left, but he would always call at like the most, he always had this incredible timing with his phone calls, right? And even to this day, he's still very supportive of my book. He was supportive of the trip. He was supportive of my book. He got married. And so he's often married, but it was always amazing because in the book, which was so true in life, he would always like have that impeccable timing of when to call. So that had to be a part of it because it was a part of it, right?
Exactly. All right. At the end of every interview, I always ask an author to give out all their social media information.
So I have a Facebook page which is called Crossing the Wake. And I also have a website, which is crossingthewake.com. Really easy.
All right.
It's the title of my book. Yeah.
All right. Well, for those of you who would like to be on the show or contact me or any reason, you can find me on Twitter at Jesse's POV. Or you can email me at the station, jessespov@klrnradio.com. I think it is time for me to snatch that copy of Crossing the Wake off the table, pour myself a cup of coffee, and settle down with a good book. And I will see you guys on the next episode of The Coffee Shop.